started preaching that I wouldn't get into politics, and I generally am pretty good at that. But boy, these last couple of weeks here in Alberta have been interesting. And I don't pretend to understand the issues. I make no effort to pick sides, and I make very little effort to even care about what's happening. But it's really interesting story. We have a new premier here. The history books from now on will say that Dave Hancock, I got the name right? See, that's a little like you. Is the premier. Now, if you had asked him at the beginning of his political career, would you like to be the premier of Alberta? I'm sure he would have said yes. At other points, he's made attempts to become the leader of the party, and I'm sure at many points he envisioned becoming premier. But if you would ask him if this was what he envisioned, I'm sure he would say no. Did you want to become premier? We would ask him, and he would likely say, not like this. You see, when people generally become premier, it is a moment of victory. It is the accumulation of a month, 2 months long of campaigning, of candidating, and garnering and receiving enough votes that you have achieved the status of premier. But that is not how Dave Hancock became the premier of Alberta. He became premier when the former leader fell from grace. He became the leader when the entire party is in shambles in the eyes of the province. And he became premier because he wasn't a threat to become the long-term premier. And so we have a new premier, and he's at a new position of power and authority and success, but not in the way that he or any politician would want to become the leader. At a similar situation, but on an entirely different scale, many years ago in the United States, there was a swearing-in and inauguration of a president named Lyndon Johnson. Some of you might remember this time in history. Lyndon Johnson was a politician that had aspirations of becoming president and had the gifts and abilities and the calling to become president in his eyes. And if you would have asked him if he wanted to be president, he would have affirmed that, and he would have said that he would very greatly and gladly have become president. And he might have envisioned in his mind an inauguration service in Washington in front of thousands, tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 people, as we have seen gather at presidential inauguration services. And presidents become presidents in the same way that premiers become premiers, by winning, by achieving, by succeeding. But not Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson was not sworn in as president in front of thousands of cheering fans. When Lyndon Johnson was sworn in as president, he had his wife on one side, and he had a very sad-looking, somber, grieving, mourning wife on the other side, not his. Those of you who know the history know who that other wife was. It was Jacqueline Kennedy, whose husband had just recently been shot. Lyndon Johnson became president not in the streets of Washington. Lyndon Johnson became president by swearing in aboard Air Force One, an emergency situation. Lyndon Johnson wanted to become president. He aspires to become president, but not like that. Not like that. We have a story that was so wonderfully acted out for us. David likely had no idea that it was in any way a possibility for him to become the king. He was the youngest of his brothers. He was from a weak family, within a weak tribe, within a weak nation. He had no aspiration of becoming king. Now, if you had convinced him that it was a possibility, and you had asked him how he would like to become the king, he would not have described this scene. He would have described likely a scene of triumph. and celebration and adulation and all of the support of a kingdom behind him. But he became king in secret. Samuel was instructed by God, but he was afraid because Saul was already king. Saul was still king. And when God called Samuel to anoint a new king, Samuel was afraid. Samuel wanted to go in secret to visit. Samuel knew that anywhere he traveled, people would be paying attention. King Saul would be paying attention. And so Samuel asked if he could travel in private. And he worked out this plan where he would travel with his religious entourage, and he would go to make a sacrifice. He would go to carry out a religious ritual. And so he might in this way avoid suspicion. And so he invited the people of this community, he invited Jesse's family, and he invited the local priests to come and to make a sacrifice. And they weren't expecting, and they weren't hoping, and they weren't aspiring that in this event a king would be crowned, because they knew what that meant. And so David became king. He became king in the eyes of God. But he was not king in the eyes of Israel, and he was not king in the eyes of Saul, who saw himself very much established as the king. And so we sometimes find ourselves in comparable situations, where we enter into new situations, new responsibilities, new privileges, and yet we are not prepared, because it comes to us in a way that we were not hoping for. We were hoping for something better, more glamorous, more exciting. As a child, I was often accused as watching too much TV, and probably earned that, and I will probably make similar accusations of my children, sort of the pattern that we expect to continue. There's a lot of good programming on TV, but there's a lot of garbage. But even within the good stuff, there is a possibility that we might have our expectations set the wrong way. And so when we watch on TV as a prime minister is assigned to the position, when the president is inaugurated, we see these moments of triumph. And so that we would be right to assume that when a new premier or prime minister or president or king reaches that pinnacle, that this would be a momentous occasion. And when people in the movies enter into relationships, when people in movies find new jobs, these are moments of celebration and triumph and support. Now, sometimes it falls on us to look beyond the story, even to correct the story. And so sometimes we have to tell our young men, real women don't look like this. We may even have to tell our young women, real men don't talk like this when we're watching TV. Things aren't always like they look on TV. And sometimes, consciously or unconsciously, we will build expectation. And expectation kills relationships. When we live out our relationships within our families, within our homes, within our communities, when we live based on expectation and what we think we deserve and are entitled to, we are establishing a failed relationship. That relationship can only meet our expectations. It can never exceed them and will very often fail us. Expectation kills relationships. When I was a student, I was very often especially studious. I'm not entirely sure how this happened. But I remember one particular case where we were reading through The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. And we as a class were preparing to act out one of the scenes in the story. And oh, I wanted to be in that so badly. And my best friend at the time, we not only wanted to be in the play, we wanted to be the two lead characters. And so we began studying. Without instruction, we were reading and memorizing the lines of Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. We knew that nobody else was working as hard to achieve this. Nobody else deserved it. We deserved it. We were ready for this. And so we were prepared for the day when the teacher would announce who was going to play these parts. But it didn't unfold like it was supposed to. It didn't unfold like it happens on TV. That day was a little bit chaotic. Some people had sort of been acting up and joking around, and the teacher, in a moment of being flustered and overwhelmed, just randomly picked a handful of people to be the characters. And it wasn't us. And oh, we were disappointed. We were mad. And so we talked about it. How are we going to write this situation? And so we devised a plan that we would go and talk to the teacher, that we would explain that we had memorized the lines, and that these other people weren't fit for this role. As though somehow you had to be a model student to play the role of Huckleberry Finn. But we were ready. We were ready to plead our case, and we went and talked to her, and she really had no time for us. She was a wonderful woman. But she didn't have time for this. And she knew that these other students were capable and that they would benefit from this exposure to opportunity and responsibility and discipline. And so that was the end of the line. And so we had resigned to the fact that we were not going to get our moment of glory. Now, as the practices went on, they went on in class. And those practices went as chaotically as the initial selection had gone. And so, in another moment of frustration, the teacher yelled at all of the kids who were making a lot of noise, criticized their commitment to the play, criticized their ability to pay attention, and then singled out my friend and I as the replacements. Now, we were going to be the two stars of the play, and that's what we wanted, but not like that. Not like that, not now. Everybody hated us. The teacher had said, all of you are scoundrels, all of you are miscreants. She probably used other words, but colorful language, and these two boys are going to be the leads. Everybody hated us. It wasn't supposed to be like that. We were supposed to be celebrated for our achievements. It's not like that. That's not what we had envisioned at all. In the second story for today, we have a man who was born blind. Now, as a man who was born blind, he likely didn't even understand what it would mean to see. He was born blind. He knew nothing else. But if you had asked him, if you had asked him if he wanted to see, he of course would have said yes. He of course would have said yes. And if you had told him someday a miracle man will come to your town and he will give you the gift of sight, and he might have envisioned that scene of what it would look like, what it would sound like, what it would feel like, and how he would be received. And what he would have envisioned would not have been what happened. It would not have been what happened. He would not have envisioned a lengthy ethical discussion about why this man was blind. He would simply have been sitting there waiting for his miracle. But he had to sit through the humiliation. What's wrong with this guy? Why is he blind? Really, do we need to do this? Can we just get to the healing? Did he do something wrong, or was it his parents? Can we leave them out of it? Just the healing. And so Jesus looked upon the man, felt pity for the man, and he spat on the ground. And so the ethical conversation, the philosophical conversation about how and the why and the what continued, and Jesus spits on the ground. I sometimes wonder, maybe this man also would have objected to this. Spit, really? This is how you're going to heal me, with spit and mud? There concerns the story of a woman who just touched Jesus' coat and she was made well. There are people who are fed just because Jesus prayed over food. But this man was healed with mud, with spit mud. We do a lot of things with spit, but none of them are wholesome. And so here is a man being healed and cleansed with mud. And so he's healed and he can see. Finally, he can see the miracle has happened. But the humiliation isn't over. The conversation continues. People see him. Wait a minute. I know you. But you're blind. Well, no, clearly I'm not blind. No, but you are. You are the blind man. That's how we know you. That's all you are to us. Yeah, but I can see. No, but how? You're blind. You're not. You haven't achieved this. How? How are you now able to see? Well, I'm not entirely sure. No, how? Nobody is ready to celebrate with him. Nobody is ready to rejoice with him. Nobody is willing to set aside the how and the why and the who for the rejoicing. This man would love to have become able to see, but maybe not like this. Maybe not like this, being dragged through the mud, being dragged through the conversations and the questions. And so when the questions come about who is this man who healed you, he doesn't know. He only saw him for the first time when he could see anything for the first time. He didn't know who it was, how he had done it, by what authority he had done it. He wasn't in a position to explain the theological background of the event. He simply stood there bearing witness to what had happened. This man became no longer blind. The old identity that he had was no longer relevant. And he really couldn't explain how it had happened. All he knew was that it had happened. And after all of this, he finds Jesus again. And he sees in Jesus, not only is this the man who healed me, as though that wasn't a big enough miracle in itself, not only did this man heal me, but this man sees beyond the argument. This man sees beyond the identity that everybody else saw in him. This man saw the inside of the blind man. And then he was willing to believe. He recognized what everybody else was doing and thinking and how that made him feel. But this man, this Jesus, looked beyond. Some of this may be resonating with some of your experiences. Some of you may have built up expectations in your life of what your present career would look like. You might have built up expectations of what it looks like to be married, what it looks like to turn 50, what it looked like to get a driver's license, what it looked like to get baptized. And all of those would probably have had wonderfully glorious background settings in your mind of what that would look like and how that would unfold. But it didn't happen like that, did it? You get to the next phase in your life, and it isn't suddenly easier. The old people in TV shows have all the answers. That's a lot of pressure to get old. Married people in movies have marriage figured out. Parents have parenting figured out. So what's wrong with us? We envision a time of being anointed, of being blessed, of being inaugurated into our current situation. And the reality is often very different. In the next few weeks and the next few months, I'm hoping to have conversations with people about baptism. If this is something that you're feeling called to, I invite you to have a conversation with me about it. But baptism isn't going to be something that is going to solve your problems. And those of you who have gone through it may very well remember that moment. That it's the culmination of a spiritual journey, it's a public declaration of faith, but it is the beginning of a very difficult process. And many people I have talked to said that after their baptism is when they were tested by Satan the most. And so that is something that we enter into, accepting that there are going to be difficulties. And when you enter the working world, when you enter the profession that you might feel called to, it's not going to be a walk in the park either. Unless the profession is cleaning parks, but that's a different story. You have been anointed in a variety of ways for a variety of settings that you've been called into. You have been anointed into the relationships that you have. You have been anointed into the spiritual journey that you find yourself in. And with that anointing comes support and blessing from God, even if it doesn't exist in the people around you. So I invite you, look into your life and find the anointing and find the support and find the gift giving that makes your work and your calling more possible. And pray to God that the gifts that you need for what you are doing will be given to you. And that God would continue to fulfill His promise that He would walk with you. Put yourselves in the shoes of this man, born blind. Facing life after this. Life was going to be beautiful when he could see. But this is a conversation that's never going to go away. Who did this? How did you deserve this? Did your sin go away too? But you're still sinning. How do you earn this vision that you have? How do you earn this relationship that you're in? How do you earn this job that you think you are qualified to do? How do you earn it? God knows. God knows you deserve it. God knows you can do it and you can fulfill it and you can live out your calling with integrity and with honesty. So reach out to God, and He will reach out to you.